Vimes turned and nodded to Detritus. Reluctantly, with a scowl at Chrysoprase, the sergeant withdrew. So did the trolls. Boots crunched over the frost, and then doors slammed shut. Vimes and Chrysoprase looked at one another in literally frozen silence.
"I can hear your teeth chattering," said Chrysoprase. "This place just right for troll, but for you it freezes to brass monkey, right? That's why I bring this fur coat."
He shrugged it off and held it out.
"There, just you and me here, okay?"
Pride was one thing, not being able to feel your fingers was another. Vimes wrapped himself in the fine, warm fur.
"Good. Can't talk to a man whose ear are froze, eh?" said Chrysoprase, pulling out a big cigar case. "Firstly, I am hearing where one of my boys was disrespectful to you. I am hearing how him suggesting I am the kind of troll that would get personal, that would raise a hand to your lovely lady and your little boy who is growing up so fine. Sometimes I am despairing of young trolls today. They show no respect. They have no style. They lack finesse. If you are wanting a new rockery in your garden, just say the word."
"What?" "Just make sure I never clap eyes on him again," said Vimes shortly.
"That will not be a problem," said the troll.
He indicated a small box about a foot square beside the crate. It was far too small to contain a whole troll. Vimes tried to ignore it, but found this hard.
"Was that all you wanted to see me for?" he said, trying to stop his imagination playing its homemade horrors across his inner eyeballs.
"Smoking, Mr. Vimes?" Chrysoprase said, flipping open the case. "The ones on the left is okay for humans. Finest kind."
"I've got my own," said Vimes, pulling out a battered packet. "What is this about? I'm a busy man."
Chrysoprase lit a silvery troll cigar and took a long pull. There was a smell like burning tin.
"Yeah, busy because that old dwarf dies," he said, not looking at Vimes.
"Well?"
"It was no troll done it," said Chrysoprase.
"How do you know?"
Now the troll looked directly at Vimes.
"If it was, I would have found out by now. I've been asking questions."
"So are we."
"I've been asking questions more louder," said the troll. "I get lots of answers. Sometimes I'm getting answers to questions I ain't even asked yet."
"I bet you are," Vimes thought. "I have to obey rules."
"Why should you care who kills a dwarf?" he said.
"Mr. Vimes, I am a honest citizen. It's my public duty to care."
Chrysoprase watched Vimes's face to see how this was playing, and grinned.
"All this stupid Coop Valley thing is bad for business. People are getting edgy, poking around, asking questions. I am sitting there getting nervous. And then I hear my old friend Mr. Vimes is on the case, and I'm thinking, that Mr. Vimes, he may be very insensitive to the nuances of troll culture sometimes, but the man is straight as a arrow, and there are on him no flies. He will see where this so-called troll left his club behind, and he is laughing his head off. It is so see-through like glass. Some dwarf did it, and want to make the trolls look bad. Q.E.D.
He sat back.
"What club?" said Vimes quietly.
"What's that?"
"I haven't mentioned a club. There was nothing in the paper about a troll club."
"Dear Mr. Vimes, that's what the lawn ornaments is saying," said Chrysoprase.
"And dwarfs talk to you, do they?" said Vimes.
The troll looked thoughtfully at the roof and blew out more smoke.
"Eventually," he said. "That's just detail, just between you and me here and now. We understand these things. It is clear as anything that the crazy dwarfs had a fight, or the old dwarf died of being alive too long, or
you asked him a few questions."
"No calling for that, Mr. Vimes. That club is nothing but a red dried swimming thing. The dwarfs put it there."
"Or a troll did the murder, dropped his club and ran," said Vimes. "Or he was clever and thought, no one would believe a troll would be so stupid as to leave his club, so if I do leave it, the dwarfs will get the blame."
"Hey, good job it's so cold in here, or I wouldn't be following you," laughed Chrysoprase. "But don't I ask, a troll gets into a nest of dim, lousy deep downers and lays out just one? No way, Jose, eh? He'd whack as many of them as he could. Thud, thud."
He looked at Vimes' puzzlement and sighed.
"See, any troll getting in there, he'd be a mad troll to start with. You know how the kids are all wound up. People been feeding them that honour and glory and destiny stuff. That coprolite rots your brain faster and slab. Faster even than slide. From what I am hearing, the dwarf got knocked off for Rensic, all slick and quiet. We don't do that, Mr. Vimes. You played the game, you know it. Get a troll in the middle of a load of dwarfs is like a fox in them things with wings, laying them egg things. Fox in a hen house. That's their, fur, big ears. Bunny. Right. Bash one dwarf and sneak out? No troll'd stop at one, Mr. Vimes. It's like you people and peanuts. The game got that right.
What's this game?
You never played Thud.
Oh, that. I don't play games, said Vimes. And on the subject of slab, you do run the biggest pipeline, just between you and me, here and now.
Nah, I'm out of that whole thing,
said Chrysoprase, waving his cigar dismissively.
You could say I'm seeing the error of my ways. From now on, it's clean living straight down the middle. Property and financial services, that is the way forward.
Glad to hear it.
Besides, the kids are moving in,
Chrysoprase went on. Sedimentary trash. A day cuts slab with bad sulfides and cooks it up with ferric chloride and crap like that. You thought slab was bad. You wait till you see slide. Slab makes a troll go and sit down to watch all the pretty colours. Be no trouble to no one, nice and quiet. But slide, make him feel like the biggest, strongest troll in the world. Don't need sleep. Don't need food. After a few weeks, don't need life. That ain't for me.
Yeah. Why kill your customers? Said Vimes.
Low blow, Mr. Vimes. Low blow.
Nah, the new kids. After time, they on slide themselves. Too much fighting. Too much and no respect.
He narrowed his eyes and leaned forward.
I know names and places.
It's your duty as a good citizen to tell me then, said Vimes.
Ye gods, what does he think I am?
But I want those names. Slide sounds nasty. Right now we need battle-crazy trolls like we need a hole in the head, which is probably what we'll end up getting.
Can't tell you.
That the problem, said Chrysoprase. This ain't the time. You know what's happening out there.
If the stupid dwarfs want to fight, we'll need every troll. That's what I'm saying. I'm telling my people, give Vimes a chance. Be good citizens, not rocking around the boat. People still listening to me and my associates, but not for much longer.
I hope you won the case, Mr. Vimes. Captain Carrot is investigating right now, said Vimes. Chrysoprase's eyes narrowed again.
Carrot Ein Founderson, he said. The big dwarf.
He a lovely boy, bright as a button, but to trolls that won't look so good, I tell you flat.
It doesn't look that good to dwarfs, if it comes to that, said Vimes. But it's my watch. I'll not be told who I put on what case.
You trust him? Said Chrysoprase.
Yes.
Okay. He a thinker. He's shiny, but...
Ein Founderson?
Dwarf name.
That a problem right there. But the name Vimes, that name means a lot. Can't be bribed.
He once arrested the patrician.
Not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but honest like anything, and he don't stop digging.
Chrysoprase caught Vimes' expression.
That's what they say. I wishing Vimes was on this case, 'cause him like me, bare-knuckle boy. He get at the truth soon enough. And to him I say, no troll did that thing, not like that.
Forget that he's talking street troll, Vimes told himself. That's just to seem like a good old troll. This is Chrysoprase. He beat out most of the old-style mobsters, who were pretty sharp players themselves, and he holds off the Thieves' Guild with one hand. And that's without sitting in a pile of snow. You know he's right.
But not the sharpest knife in the drawer, thank you so very much.
But Captain Carrot was shiny, was he? Vimes' mind always looked for connections, and came up with,
Who is Mr. Shine?
Chrysoprase was absolutely still, the only motion the greenish smoke spiralling up from the cigar. Then, when he spoke, his air was uncharacteristically jovial.
Him? Oh, a story for kids. Kind of like a troll legend from the far-off days along ahead, he said.
Troll lore says that living creatures actually move backwards through time. It's complicated.
Like a folk hero? Yeah, that kind of thing. kind of silly thing people talk about when times is tricky. Just a willy-de-wisp, not real. This is modern times.
And that seemed to be that. Vimes stood up. All right, I've heard what you say, he said, and now I've got a watch to run. Chrysoprase puffed his cigar and flicked the ash into the frost where it sizzled.
You going back to the watch house by way of Turnagain Lane, he said.
No, that's well out of the... Vimes stopped. There had been a hint of suggestion in the troll's voice.
Give my regard to the old lady next door to the cake shop, said the troll.
I will. Will I? Said Vimes, nonplussed.
Sergeant!
The door at the far end opened with a bang, and Detritus ran in, crossbow at the ready. Vimes, aware that one of the troll's few faults was an inability to understand all the implications of the term safety catch, fought down a dreadful urge to dive for the ground.
Time's coming when we all got to know where we're standing,
mused Chrysoprase, as if talking to the audience of Ghostly Pork.
And who is standing next to us?
As Vimes headed for the door, the troll added,
Give the coat to your lady, Mr. Vimes. With my compliments.
Vimes stopped, dead, and looked down at the coat over his shoulders. It was of some silvery fur, beautifully warm, but not as warm as the rage rising within him. He'd nearly walked out wearing it. He'd come that close. He shrugged it off and wrapped it into a ball. Quite probably several dozen small, rare, squeaky things had died to make this, but he could see to it that their deaths were not, in some small way, in vain. He threw the bundle high in the air, yelled, Sergeant! And threw himself onto the floor. There was the instant slap of the bow, a sound as of a swarm of maddened bees, the plink, plink, plink of arrow fragments turning a circle of metal roof into a colander, and the smell of burnt hair. Vimes got to his feet. What was falling around him was a kind of hairy snow. He met Chrysoprase's gaze. "Trying to bribe a watch officer is a serious offence," he said. The troll winked.
"Honest like anything, I tell them. Nice to have this little talk, Mr. Vimes."
When they were well outside, Vimes pulled Detritus into an alley, insofar as it was possible to pull a troll anywhere. "Okay, what do you know about Slide?" he said. The troll's red eyes gleamed.
"I've been hearing rumours."
"Head to Treaclemine Road and put a heavy squad together. Go to Turnagain Lane behind the Scours. There's a wedding cake maker up there, I think. You've got a nose for drugs. Poke it around, Sergeant."
"Right," said Detritus. "You've been told something, sir."
"Let's just say I think it's an earnest of good intent, shall we?"
"That's good, sir," said the troll. "Earnest who?"
Someone we know wants to show us what a good citizen he is. Get to it, okay?" Detritus slung his crossbow over his shoulder for ease of carriage and knuckled off at high speed. Vimes leaned against the wall. This was going to be a long day. And now he... On the wall, just a little above head height, a troll had scored a rough sketch of a cut diamond. You could tell troll graffiti easily. They did it with a fingernail, and it was usually an inch deep in the masonry. Next to the diamond was scored Shine.
"Ahem!"
said a small voice in his pocket. Vimes sighed and pulled out the gooseberry while he still stared at the word.
"Yes?"
"You said you didn't want to be interrupted," said the imp defensively.
"Well, what have you got to say?"
"It's 6:11, insert name here," said the imp meekly.
"Good grief, why didn't you tell me?"
"Because you said you didn't want to be interrupted," the imp quavered.
"Yes, but not..."
Vimes stopped. 11 minutes. He couldn't run it, not at this time of day.
6 o'clock is important."
"You didn't tell me that," said the imp, holding its head in its hands. "You just said no interruptions. I'm really, really sorry."
Shine forgotten, Vimes looked around desperately at the nearby buildings. There wasn't much use for Clax Towers down here where the slaughterhouse district met the docks, but he spotted the big semaphore tower atop the dock superintendent's office.
"Get up there," he ordered, opening the box. "Tell them you've come from me, and this is priority one, right? They're to tell Pseudopolis Yard where I'm starting from. I'll cross the river on Misbegot Bridge and head along Prout's. The officers at the yard will know what this is all about. Go!"
The imp went from despair to enthusiasm in an instant. It saluted.
"Yes, indeed, sir. The Blue Nose TM Integrated Messenger Service will not let you down, insert name here. I shall interface right away."
It leapt down and became a disappearing blur of green. Vimes ran down to the dockside and began to race upriver past the ships. The docks were always too crowded, and the road was an obstacle course of bales and ropes and piles of crates, with an argument every 10 yards. But Vimes was a runner by nature, and knew all the ways to make progress in the city's crowded streets. He dodged and leapt, jinked and weaved, and, when necessary, barged. A rope tripped him up. He rolled upright. A stevedore barged into him. Vimes laid him out with an uppercut and speeded up in case the man had chums around. This was important. A shiny four-horse carriage swung out of Monkey Street, with two footmen clinging to the back of it. Vimes speeded up at a desperate burst, grabbed a handhold, pulled himself up between the astonished footmen, dragged himself across the swaying roof, and dropped down on the seat beside the young driver. "City watch," he announced, flashing his badge. "Keep going straight ahead."
But I'm supposed to turn left onto—" the young man began.
"And give it a touch of the whip, if you please," said Vimes, ignoring him. "This is important."
"All right. Death-defying high-speed chase, is it?" said the coachman, enthusiasm rising. "Right. I'm the boy for that. You've got your man right here, sir. Do you know, I can make this carriage go along for 50 yards on two wheels. Only old Miss Robinson won't let me. Right side or left side, just say the word. Hya! Hya!"
"Look, just—" Vimes began as the whip cracked overhead.
"Of course, getting the horses to run along on two legs was the trick. Actually, it's more of a hop, you might say," the coachman went on, turning his hat around for minimum wind resistance. "Here, do you want to see my wheelie?"
Not especially," said Vimes, staring ahead.
"The hooves don't half-race sparks when I do me wheelie, I can tell you. Hya!"
The scenery was blurring. Ahead was the cut-through leading to Two-Pint Dock. It was normally covered by a swing bridge. Normally. It was swung now. Vimes could see the masts of a ship being warped out of the dock and into the river.
"Oh, don't you bother about that, sir," yelled the coachman beside him. "We'll go along the quay and jump it."
"You can't jump a two-master with a four-horse carriage, man."
"I bet you can if you aim between the masts, sir. Hya! Hya!"
Ahead of the coach, men were running for cover. Vimes pushed the boy back into his seat, grabbed a handful of reins, put both feet against the brake lever, and hauled. The wheels locked. The horses began to turn. The coach slid, the metal rims of the wheels sending up sparks and the throaty scream of metal. The horses turned some more. The coach began to swing, dragging the horses with it, whirling them out like fairground mounts. Their hooves made trails of fire across the cobblestones. At this point, Vimes let go of everything, gripped the underside of the seat with one hand, held onto the rail with the other, shut his eyes, and waited for all the noise to die away. Blessedly, it did. Only one little sound remained. A petulant banging on the coach roof, caused probably by a walking stick. A querulous, elderly female voice could be heard saying, "Johnny, have you been driving fast again, young man?"
"A bootlegger's turn," Johnny breathed,
looking at a team of four steaming horses now facing back the way they'd come.
"I am impressed."
He turned to Vimes, who wasn't there. The men moving the ship had dropped their ropes and run at the sight of a coach and four spinning down the road towards them. The dock entrance was narrow. A man could easily scramble up a rope onto the deck, run across the ship and let himself down onto the cobbles on the other side. And this a man had just done. Vimes, speeding along, could see that Miss Begot Bridge was going to be a struggle. An overloaded hay wagon had wedged itself between the rickety houses that lined the bridge, ripped out part of someone's upper story, and had shed some of its load in the process. There was a fight going on between the carter and the unimpressed owner of the new bungalow. Valuable seconds were spent struggling over and through the hay until he was hurrying through the backed-up traffic to the other end of the bridge. Ahead of him was the wide thoroughfare known as Prout's, full of vehicles and uphill all the way. He wasn't going to make it. It must be gone 5 to 6 already. The thought of it, the thought of that little face.
"Mr. Vimes!"
He turned. A mail coach had just pulled out onto the road behind him and was coming up at a trot. Carrot was sitting beside the driver and waving frantically at him.
"Get on the step, sir," he yelled. "You don't have much time."
Vimes started to run once more, and as the coach drew level, jumped onto the door's step and hung on.
"Isn't this that mail coach to Quirm?"
he shouted as the driver urged the horses into a canter.
"That's right, sir," said Carrot. "I explained it was a matter of extreme importance."
Vimes redoubled his grip. The mail coaches had good horses. The wheels, not very far from him, were already a blur.
"How did you get here so quick?" he yelled. "Shortcut! Through the apothecary garden, sir." "What? That little walk by the river? That's never wide enough for a coach like this." "It was a bit of a squeeze, sir, yes. It got easier when the coach lamp scraped off."
Vimes was now able to take in the state of the coach's side. The paintwork was scored all along it.
"All right," he shouted. "Tell the driver I'll meet the bills, of course. But it'll be wasted, Carrot. Park Lane'll be jam-packed at this time of day. Don't worry, sir. I should hang on very tight if I were you, sir."
Vimes heard the whip crack. This was a real mail coach. Mailbags don't care whether they're comfortable. He could feel the acceleration. Park Lane would be coming up very soon. Vimes couldn't see much because the wind of their flight was making his eyes water, but up ahead was one of the city's most fashionable traffic jams. It was bad enough at any time of day, but early evening was particularly horrible, owing to the Ankh-Morpork belief that right-of-way was the prerogative of the heaviest vehicle or the gobbiest driver. There were minor collisions all the time, which were inevitably followed by both vehicles blocking the junction whilst the drivers got down to discussing road safety issues with reference to the first weapon they could lay their hands on. And it was into this maelstrom of jostling horses, scurrying pedestrians and cursing drivers that the mail coach was heading, apparently at full gallop. He shut his eyes and then, hearing a change in the sound of the wheels, risked opening them again. The coach flew across the junction. Vimes had a momentary glimpse of a huge queue fuming and shouting behind a couple of immovable troll officers before they were spinning on down towards Schoon Avenue. "You closed the road! You closed the road!" he yelled above the wind. "And Kingsway, sir, just in case!" Carrot shouted down. "You closed two major roads, two whole damn roads, in the rush hour!" "Yes, sir," said Carrot. "It was the only way!" Vimes hung on, speechless. Would he have dared do that? But that was Carrot all over. There was a problem, and now it's gone. Admittedly, the whole city is probably solid with wagons by now, but that's a new problem. He'd be home in time. Would a minute have mattered? No, probably not, although young Sam appeared to have a very accurate internal clock. Possibly even 2 minutes would be okay. 3 minutes even. You could go to five, perhaps, but that was just it. If you could go to 5 minutes, then you'd go to 10, then half an hour, a couple of hours, and not see your son all evening. So that was that. 6 o'clock, prompt, every day, read to young Sam. No excuses. He'd promised himself that. No excuses. No excuses at all. Once you had a good excuse, you opened the door to bad excuses. He had nightmares about being too late. He had a lot of nightmares about young Sam. They involved empty cots and darkness. It had all been too good. In a few short years, he, Sam Vimes, had gone up in the world like a balloon. He was a duke. He commanded the watch. He was powerful. He was married to a woman whose compassion, love, and understanding he knew a man such as he did not deserve. And he was as rich as creosote. Fortune had rained its gravy, and he'd been the man with the big bowl. And it had all happened so fast. And then young Sam had come along. At first it had been fine. The baby was, well, a baby, all lolling head and burping and unfocused eyes, entirely the preserve of its mother. And then, one evening, his son had turned and looked directly at Vimes, with eyes that for his father outshone the lamps of the world, and fear had poured into Sam Vimes's life in a terrible wave. All this good fortune, all this fierce joy, it was wrong. Surely the universe could not allow this amount of happiness in one man, not without presenting a bill. Somewhere a big darkness was cresting, and when it broke over his head, it would wash everything away. Some days he was sure he could hear its distant roar. Shouting incoherent thanks, he leapt down as the coach slowed, flailed to stay upright, and skidded into his driveway. The front door was already opening when he raced towards it, scattering gravel, and there was Willikins holding up the book. Vimes grabbed it and pounded up the stairs as, down in the city, the clocks began to mark various approximations to the hour of 6 o'clock. Sybil had been adamant about not having a nursemaid. Vimes, for once, had been even more adamant that they got one, and a head cavern girl for the pedigree dragon pens outside. A body could only do so much after all. He'd won. Purity, who seemed a decent type, had just finished settling young Sam into his cot when Vimes staggered in. She gave him about one-third of a curtsy before she caught his pained expression and remembered last week's impromptu lecture on the rights of man, and then she hurried out. It was important that no one else was here. This moment in time was just for the Sams. Young Sam pulled himself up against the cot's rails and said, "Da!" The world went soft. Vimes stroked his son's hair. It was funny, really. He spent the day yelling and shouting and talking and bellowing. But here, in this quiet time smelling, thanks to purity, of soap, he never knew what to say. He was tongue-tied in the presence of a 14-month-old baby. All the things he thought of saying, like, "Who's daddy's little boy, then?" sounded horribly false, as though he'd got them from a book. There was nothing to say, nor, in this soft pastel room, anything that needed to be said. There was a grunt from under the cot. Dribble the dragon was dozing there. Ancient, fireless, with ragged wings and no teeth, he clambered up the stairs every day and took up station under the cot. No one knew why. He made little whistling noises in his sleep. The happy silence enveloped Vimes, but it couldn't last. There was the reading of the picture book to be undertaken. That was the meaning of 6 o'clock. It was the same book every day. The pages of said book were rounded and soft where young Sam had chewed them, but to one person in this nursery, this was the book of books, the greatest story ever told. Vimes didn't need to read it any more. He knew it by heart. It was called Where's My Cow? The unidentified complainant had lost their cow. That was the story, really. Page one started promisingly. Where's my cow? Is that my cow? It goes baa. It is a sheep. That's not my cow. Then the author began to get to grips with their material. Where's my cow? Is that my cow? It goes nay. It is a horse. That's not my cow. At this point, the author had reached an agony of creation and was writing from the racked depths of their soul. Where's my cow? Is that my cow? It goes hurrah. It is a hippopotamus. That's not my cow. This was a good evening. Young Sam was already grinning widely and crowing along with the plot. Eventually, the cow would be found. It was that much of a page-turner. Of course, some suspense was lent by the fact that all other animals were presented in some way that could have confused a kitten, who perhaps had been raised in a darkened room. The horse was standing in front of a hat stand, as they so often did, and the hippo was eating at a trough against which was an upturned pitchfork. Seen from the wrong direction, the tableau might look for just one second like a cow. Young Sam loved it anyway. It must have been the most cuddled book in the world. Nevertheless, it bothered Vimes, even though he'd got really good at the noises and would go up against any man in his rendition of the Hurrug. But was this a book for a city kid? When would he ever hear those noises? In the city, the only sound those animals would make was sizzle. But the nursery was full of the conspiracy, with bar lambs and teddy bears and fluffy ducklings everywhere he looked. One evening, after a trying day, he'd tried the Vimes Street version. Where's my daddy? Is that my daddy? He goes, Bugrit, Millennium, Hand and Shrimp. He is foul old Ron. That's not my daddy. It had been going really well when Vimes heard a meaningful little cough from the doorway, wherein stood Sybil. Next day, young Sam, with a child's unerring instinct for this sort of thing, said, Buglet, to Purity. And that, although Sybil never raised the subject when they were alone, was that. From then on, Sam stuck rigidly to the authorised version. He recited it tonight, while wind rattled the windows, and this little nursery world with its pink and blue peace, its creatures who were so very soft and woolly and fluffy, seemed to enfold them both. On the nursery clock, a little woolly lamb rocked the seconds away. When he not quite awoke, in twilight, with ragged strands of dark sleep filling his mind, Vimes stared in incomprehension at the room. Panic filled him. What was this place? Why were there all these grinning animals? What was lying on his foot? Who was this doing the asking, and why was he wrapped in a blue shawl with ducks on it? Blessed recollection flowed in. Young Sam was fast asleep, with Vimes's helmet clutched like a teddy bear. And Dribble, always on the lookout for somewhere warm to slump, had rested his head on Vimes's boot. Already the leather was covered with goo. Vimes carefully retrieved his helmet, gathered the shawl around him, and wandered down into the big front hall. He could see light under the door of the library, and so, still slightly muzzy, he pushed his way in. Two watchmen stood up. Sybil turned in her chair by the fire. Vimes felt the ducks slowly slither down his shoulders and end up in a heap on the floor.
"I let you sleep, Sam," said Lady Sybil. "You didn't get in this morning till after 3."
"Everyone's double-shifting, dear," said Sam, daring Carrot and Sally to even think about telling anyone they'd seen the boss wearing a blue shawl covered in ducks. "I've got to set a good example."
"I'm sure you intend to, Sam, but you look like a horrible warning," said Sybil. "When did you last eat?"
"I had a lettuce, tomato and bacon sandwich, dear," he said, endeavouring by tone of voice to suggest that the bacon had been a mere condiment rather than a slab barely covered by the bread.
"I expect you jolly well did,"
said Sybil, rather more accurately conveying the fact that she didn't believe a word of it.
"Captain Carrot has something to tell you. Now you sit down, and I'm going to see what's happened to dinner."
When she bustled out in the direction of the kitchens, Vimes turned to the watchman and debated for a moment whether to give that sheepish little grin and eye-roll that between men means women, eh? And decided not to, on the basis that the watchman consisted of Lance Constable Humperdinck, who'd think he was a fool, and Captain Carrot, who wouldn't know what it meant. He settled, instead, on, "Well?"
"We did the best we could, sir," said Carrot. "I was right. That mine is a very unhappy place."
"Murder scenes usually are, yes."
"Actually, I don't think we found the murder scene, sir."
"Didn't you see the body?"
"Yes, sir, I think. Really, sir, you had to be there."